The Mixing Music Podcast is proud to say that we have a lot of free resources outside of the actual podcast. Visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/links to find access to our free PDFs and free resources.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host, and with me, as always, my beautiful co-host, Lou. How are you, Lou? Beautiful. Well, hold on. We got to think of another nickname for you. We said Groovy Lou last time, so
can we call me
Luscious
Sweet Lou? Lou?
Sweet
luscious
Lou.
Ooh, Luscious Lou.
Luscious Lou. Okay, next time is Sweet Ooh. Lou, but Luscious Lou.
Yeah, Luscious.
Luscious Lou. I don't. That's kind of like a weird adjective. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that, to be honest.
I've never been called luscious before, so as long as Anna's okay with it, I think it's okay. Anna's my fiance, by the way.
I think, you know what? I just wanted an L adjective. That's what that was. But
Lazy Lou?
Today is a fun one. Today is a lazy. No, we can't say that. We can't say that. But today is a fun episode for a lot of people that are listening today. We get a lot of requests to talk about technical stuff. Whether about how to use specific plugins or gear or whatnot, and how busing and routing and gain staging works, we will probably once a month start incorporating a FAQ, you know, start doing FAQ episodes where we answer some questions. So feel free to either DM us on Instagram. What's your at?
At MidSideSound, MidSideSound.
And mine's at DK Mixes. They're both in the description of the podcast episode as well. Or you can email me your questions. Please leave your name and where you're from and all the information if you'd like to be shout out. And just email us your questions. Just let us know that this is a question for the podcast. I think we would love to start doing some FAQ kind of like questions. But today, we want to talk about gear. Gear. Now, this is a beautiful topic.
Me and DK like to go head-to-head on these things, and not for the reasons of who's smarter, but rather, why do we even care sometimes?
So, I'm going to be totally honest with you. If you've been a long-time listener of the podcast, you know that although I am extremely technical and can keep up, maybe not as much as Lou, who like actually can build this stuff and repair this stuff, but like at the same time, I understand why people use analog gear or different things, but
it's
like
a secret magical little touch. It's like it's like salt on your fries.
But at the same time, for me, if you know me, like I like using it if it's an option. But at the same time, if it gets even close to in the way of efficiency, heck nah. Like for example, I love Warm Audio. Please sponsor us. I love Warm Audio's. Nice. Little bus comp that they have. It's like $600-$700. It's cheap. Like, and I have used a bunch of other stuff, like really nice stuff, like bus comps. And that one's just like really nice. It's got a high pass filter built in, transformer option. It's like really nice. And it's super easy to use. And I only use it in one spot, which is typically usually the mix bus. So like I print it, and because everything is dented, so like I just in the comment section of Pro Tools, I type down my settings so I don't even have to recall it.
Three detents to the right.
Yeah, no, like this is the attack, this is the ratio, this is the release, this is how much gain reduction I was getting about, like, and even that, like you could get really technical, like, but you're like not getting the same exact gain reduction. You're like, maybe it might be -1, but you're actually doing -1.2 less. I'm like, I don't. That's
yeah,
one thing
those
about
are,
me.
Those
I'm not
are micro things.
Like, I don't care about that stuff. I don't care about that stuff. And I come from like, you know, I talk about him too much. And he probably's like, yo, stop talking about me, DK. But like Leslie, like honestly.
Leslie should just give you a like small percentage of mixes that he finds due to your podcast.
I know, for real. So for reals. But
Leslie.
Leslie Brathwaite, like he's known for having nice equipment and consoles. And bringing his bringing his laptop and throwing it on top of the console and totally ignoring the console. To a point, I think he actually made mention that he doesn't even use the monitoring section, or he only uses the monitoring section, one of the two.
Yeah, but it's pretty popular practice.
So it's like, it's crazy to me. And, well, to a lot of people. But, like, that's kind of like, I'm in that mindset. Like, I was kind of, it's funny, I bring him up a lot because I was already in that mindset before, and then he just made me more confident in that mindset. Like, I'm not anti-gear, but I know that there's value, and like every time I use it, I'm like, holy crap, I can't get this sound with plugins. But if I can't get that sound with just plugins, and let alone just stock plugins, then I'm not a mix engineer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I should, I like, because what we, I say this all the time, like, when I was coaching someone hired me for a mix, and they paid a little bit extra to like just Zoom and FaceTime, talk about the mix and how I did it so they can use it. Like, that was one of the listeners of the podcast. Shout out to you, Steven. And what we did is, as we showed him, like, the first thing that I said is, he asked me how I got the drum sound. The first thing I said is, when I heard the drums, I knew exactly what I wanted to do sonically before I even touched anything.
Yep. And I feel like that's half the battle. Whether you have gear or not, it's just understanding what is your intention.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the gear and the different third-party plugins and stuff, it just makes things easier. Yeah. For example, like, we could talk about plugin lines, like the black box, like the way that it saturates. Yeah.
What is it, the HG2?
HG2, the black box, like, it saturates in a specific way that I could probably emulate somehow in a different plugin. But it just does it on its own, that specific way. So it's like, I just rather use that. It's faster. It's easier. It's actually more efficient.
Yep.
So tell us, Lou, like, what kind of gear, is gear a hoax? Like, what do you think about this?
I think it's a double-edged sword. I believe gear is both a hoax and not.
Okay, please explain this.
Let's go into the conspiracy theories here.
Oh, shoot.
All right. So in a nutshell, this is my view. I grew up in the rock world, and guitar amps vary extremely in price. You can get a 20-watt tube amp.
Oh, okay, hold on, wait. A guitar amp has to be tube, okay?
Have you heard some of the solid state stuff from Fender? They're not bad when you're in the clean tones, but if you're trying to get into distorted tones, it's gotta be tube. But if you gotta have some grit, get some tube grit.
But then there's like, what is it? Like, again, I'm not a super rock guy. So, like, I know, like, the Helix from Line 6 is really nice at emulation. What's the one that you always see that's, like, kind of like.
Oh, the Kemper?
The Kemper.
Positive Grid also has their own as well.
Yeah. And you're sponsored by Positive Grid. Can I say that?
I'm not sponsored. I worked with them as a representative at NAMM before.
That's dope. Positive Grid. So, like, I mean, they are getting a lot better.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I don't say this against any company specifically, but, you know, I've also watched as Ivana Manley is talking about how some companies try to clone their hardware, and she will say it in front of them in the middle of, like, different expos where it's like, yeah, you know, these plugins are cool, but they're not anywhere close to the real thing. And I'll go into that right now. But in a nutshell, this is what we're looking at. The hoax behind gear is that you'll become a better engineer if you have it.
Amen.
That is bull shiza. I don't know if I can say shiza, but, you know.
For reals, though. Like,
yeah. The reality is this. Look, I tell DK, sometimes I hear his mixes and I think he's better. He hears mine and he thinks the opposite, you know, and it's fine. We're just different. But the reality is, you can't tell me that because I have the gear, I'm instantly better than you. I've heard some amazing mixes out of laptops with stock plugins. I've heard artists who record their own vocals in their bedroom. And because they don't really know what they're doing, all they do is throw up some autotune, some reverb, some delays, and they just try to balance as best as they can their levels. And it sounds amazing. And they're like, can you mix this? All I'm doing is adding a touch of compression, touch of EQ. I'm putting maybe a little bit of saturation, and it's done. Like, a lot of times, if you have the vision, if you know what it is you're trying to execute, and you know how to use your tools that you have available, then that's fine, because it's a poor workman that blames his tools.
Can we say that again?
It's a poor workman that blames his tools.
Ooh, that's heavy.
Now let's go into why it matters.
Okay, please. Yeah, please argue for gear.
So everybody wants to know, how do you get that unique sound and this and that, or how do you get a better sound? Once you know what you're doing, you can now start saying, okay, am I professional enough to actually afford it? Because I'll be honest, we have a Tube Tech right there. That's about $3,600. That's a down payment on a nice car. Do you want a nice car, or do you want a compressor that's not going to make you a better engineer?
Well, the answer for me is obvious. A car doesn't make me money.
A Tube Tech does, but arguably speaking, does the Tube Tech make you more money as a mixing engineer or as
a
recording engineer?
Heck
exactly.
Nah.
So if you want your mixes to get better, you don't need a Tube Tech.
And to be honest, you don't need, for reals. Yeah. And that's just because we own a commercial studio.
Exactly. If we own a commercial studio, and we actually book out our time to people like from Atlantic, Sony, Universal. You know, these people have expectations. They have gear requirements. And because of that, we can justify the actual cost of it. But once again, that's where you ask yourself, am I actually making money off of the gear? Am I actually required to have it? Is there a reason why it makes sense for me to have it on the way in? Now, here's the fun part. I do believe it makes things sound better. I do believe that plug-in emulations are not quite there yet, but they're so freaking close. I had to think of another word. My bad. There was a delay there. But they're so freaking close that sometimes, depending on what's going on, I will choose to mix in the box and solely in the box because the situation does not call for analog gear. Now, let's say that I'm at the studio and the client is asking me to mix a song and he's solely paying for the studio for me to mix. I will run through the analog gear because I have it available. They're there to give me notes live. And I know I'm not going to do a lot of revisions, and I can always print it on the way in, so that I don't have to rely on the gear when I get revision notes. Like, can you make this one word louder? I don't want to have to redial that compressor back in. It's annoying. Efficiency dies. But every time I use my Retro Double Wide, Retro Instruments, if you're listening, I so love it. It's so amazing.
Oh,
I prefer it over my Tube Tech. I'll be honest.
I actually used it as on the Tuba. So I was like trying to get it to like match. And I did. And I turned it on and off. It's the Retro. I will say I've never really felt this before. But it was like, usually with plugins, it's straightforward. Like, you know what the difference is when you turn it on. Like the UAD Pultec stuff, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But you can hear kind of like the bass boost and like the thing that the Pultec does naturally. But like, I put that on.
And it's a secret.
It's like, for the first time ever, like me with the ATCs, like these like really nice speakers in a really analytical room. And as an experienced person, I was like, I don't know what's happening.
But
and
it's
amazing.
Magical.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
Like, I've never like, it was so beautiful. And like, I think I give credit to that.
Yeah, so that's why I say, like, there's certain pieces that hold this little magical taste, if you will, and they can offer that to your mix, and that's great. But the reality is this, if you don't know what you're doing with it, I don't suggest you spend the money on it. I'd actually rather you spend your money on acoustic treatment, on your monitoring section, because you know, this is public knowledge. You know, TZO is always posting about his gear that he uses to mix. He has a pair of PMC 226s, one of my favorite monitors, alongside like some of the Amphion stuff. But he just has a pair of 226s. He has a Lynx Hilo, a Tube Tech CO1B, and an Aurora GTP1. But that's
Which,
all the
this
gear
is. All,
is
this is for all those that are like kind of new to the mixing game.
It's just
this
a
is
mic
all
pre.
Just high end gear.
Yeah, but it's a single vocal chain, a two-channel interface, and some nice monitors. But even when I talked to him, he's like, I don't really care about if it's vintage or not. If it sounds good, it is good, period. We're talking about Chris Brown's engineer. He's the guy mixing all the new stuff that you hear on the radio from Chris Brown, you know, multi-platinum engineer, who says, it doesn't really matter to me if it's vintage or new. Does it sound good is the point. Because he's swapped out a bunch of microphones. We set up a bunch of demos, and he'll actually say, I don't like this one. I don't like that one. I don't like this. And the funny thing is, we're presenting him with like the latest models, what's popular, what's going on in the market. But he's so focused on getting the right sound versus the popular sound. It doesn't matter if you have a Tube Tech, if a $1,300 compressor is going to be the favorable one. You just spent three times more for something that you like less.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that there is a point. If you're listening right now and you're looking at wanting to buy gear, and you own a personal studio or a home studio, project studio, it's not necessarily commercial. What I mean by commercial is that labels are booking you and you rent out the space. as a space.
Yep.
Not as like people hire you as the engineer, like you rent out the space and people bring their own engineers as part of the offering. If you do that, then maybe the gear selection might be important, because then usually in an indie setting, if a client is wanting specific gear, that's kind of a red flag, and like that's like showing that they're high maintenance. But like the other day we had Smoke Perp asking us in the session like if we had a C800G.
And not just that, but before they even booked the session, I was required to send them an equipment list. What Pro Tools version are you using? Like, if it's not HDX, we don't want to book. Good thing we have HDX. If you don't have a 1073 or a CL1B, we don't want to book, which is fine. But the reality is we're talking about now almost investing $15,000 between those three pieces, depending on your system requirements and everything.
Yeah.
But that's just starting up. And not everybody's set up to just spend $15,000 on something, not including the mic yet. The microphone that they requested now, if you try to buy it on the market now that it's discontinued, is $20,000 average. I don't have $20,000 for that. And unfortunately, we had to make do with what we have. But if you're a home studio, I don't suggest spending $40,000 on something that you think is going to make you sound like Chris Brown when you haven't trained your vocals like Chris Brown has. If you haven't learned how to do harmony stacks and things of that nature. If you haven't learned how to use your own stock plugins and third-party plugins in a way that Teezeo can make it sound good. Because Teezeo isn't relying on outboard gear to make Chris Brown sound amazing.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of economics and like marketplace and like studying trends and like consumer trends and stuff like that. And a little bit of capitalism in there, in the sense that like now in 2020, if you have $200 and you buy yourself a little Focusrite kit that they sell at Guitar Center, the $200, yep, it comes with a microphone and an interface and maybe their set of their own in-house crappy headphones.
Yeah.
We're at a point right now where in the economic marketplace of audio, no company can afford to put out gear that is not usable. That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so even at that, even if you only have like a $200 setup, which to be honest, like I don't like that setup. I don't like the Focusrite mic. It's impossible to make a good mic and good condenser mic with $80. But
imagine
like,
having $200 and you have to build a microphone, an interface, a pop filter.
Yeah, of course. Of course it's not going to be good. But at the same time, it's still good enough. And the margins like are good enough that they can't afford to make a crappy product. Yeah. So like you have no excuses. Not the 70s or 80s anymore where you need $1 million to start a little project studio. Like you need $200 and you better, like if it's not good, it ain't your gear, folks. Like sure, it could ramp it up. Like, yeah, if all of a sudden, if you go from a 2i2 Focusrite interface to like a really nice like Lavery or like something, I think there's going to be a huge ass difference. But like, that's not going to stop you from getting a Grammy if the song is that good.
I'll be honest, people. Let's just clear the air on this one. I've got lots of Grammy winning friends who only maybe had an Apollo and one mic, you know, when they won their Grammys. And that's it.
And some of y'all listening right now have more than that.
Yep.
And still wanting more gear. Like
I remember working at Sam Ash, and one of the things that opened up my eyes to not needing gear, because everybody knows that knows me, I'm a gear guy. Like I think about all of our rack units are mine.
Yeah. No. For reals.
Like at least $40,000 worth of gear is mine. But that's because I have such love and appreciation for what it does that I justify it for my own use. But even when DK came and partnered with me on this studio, he even said, like, honestly, I probably won't even use it, you know, even though we have it. Like, because the reality is efficiency is going to be your best friend. But when I was at Sam Ash, a client came in, and he was a Grammy Award winning jazz producer. And he said, all I need to build a studio nowadays is an Apollo, a Dangerous Music D-Box.
Which is a monitor controller.
With a nice D to A, his talk back and all that. It's a really great product, guys. But, you know, realistically, how many times are you doing custom cue mixes nowadays?
Never.
I only do it when I'm working with bands, which is, like we said in a previous podcast, is such a niche market nowadays because, you know, vocal tracking has become like the number one style tracking that you're getting hired for. I think the last time I actually recorded drums was about 4 months ago, and yet I've got a collection of mics and preamps dedicated to drums.
I have a drum kit dedicated to drums.
And it's stacked in a corner.
Yeah, for real.
But, you know, it all goes back to saying, you know, if Grammy Award winners are saying, hey, I don't need all the extra gear. I know Grammy Award winning vocalists and writers and producers who say they prefer using the Slate mic because it's under $1,000. They can emulate many different types of microphones, which even them, they're saying our engineers are telling us that they can't really hear the difference so much. And other ones are saying that, yeah, they hear the difference. But they all agree, even if you hear the difference, is it usable? You know, just focus on getting the best quality you can out of what you have before you start investing in a lot of gear. Now, if you are interested in gear, I'm always happy to help people find the best deals and everything.
Yo, let's talk about this. Actually, this is super important. You got to email. What's your email?
Lu, at inthemixstudios.com.
Studios with an S.
Yes.
Studios.
I've helped a lot of people acquire their gear. I've actually set up consoles, patch bays for a lot of people. One of the more popular spaces that I've done is the SSL console and the vocal mics and all that kind of stuff at Chris Brown's house. That's actually how I met TZO, doing that installation. I've done
setups. I heard a rumor that maybe we might have convinced TZO to come on be a podcast.
You know, TZO is a good friend, and I've talked to him about it, and he's definitely interested. So I'd rather leave it as a little surprise if he says yes or no, but I think we're hinting in a certain direction now.
Yeah. Whoa.
And you know, that's kind of the funny thing. Like, it just goes back to saying, like, when you're building out these spaces for people, sometimes you want to have the right gear for your vocal chain, but that's almost it. You know, I believe gear is amazing when it comes to the recording process, and I think it's a nuisance when it becomes a mixing requirement. Because if you had to do EQ changes, maybe this is a little bright, or can we scoop out a little mids, and now you have to do recall settings and all that. I know studios who have assistants dedicated to system recalls where they take a 30-minute break in between mixes because their assistant now has to recall the console. Imagine what you could be doing with those 30 minutes. Let's say you mix 3 songs a day. That's an hour and a half of your time just wasted on recalls.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, we don't get to work in music full time. So an hour and a half out of our time on that extreme is a lot of time to waste. Macon was saying, you know, in order to maintain a relationship in our industry, sometimes we have to compromise with our partners. And the reality is that, you know, he likes to record when his partner's not home. So he tries to get as much as he can done. And I believe
like his girl, like partner as in his girl.
Yeah. You know, whatever. Whatever.
I thought, like, because you say also partner for, like, business partner. So no confusion here. Like, okay. His girlfriend.
Yeah. Well, so in a nutshell, he only has about, like, 2-3 hours to record, what, like, 3 songs? Because he's trying to now, he's been doing 1 song a week, and he's been announcing how he's going to be doing 2 songs a week soon.
Oh, we already finished a year and a half worth of music, and we're only on week 33.
See, and that's what I'm talking about. Some people need efficiency more than they need technical superiority. Yes. The gear is amazing. Yes, it does help, but it really helps more in the vocal chain or in the recording process. But when it comes to the production side of things, it's best to simplify that, because sometimes you're looking for speed and quantity, and sometimes you're looking for quality over speed. But the reality is this. In our job, the reason that we're so successful and have the clients that we have is because we've met certain expectations of theirs. And in order to meet these expectations, sometimes you have to compromise between, do I have a wall full of gear that's going to slow me down, or do I condense it down to the core items that I need and speed up my workflow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there is one specific aspect where gear does help.
Mastering.
Other than mastering, I was going to say that's like, because for me, efficiency is the game, name of the game.
Yeah.
Efficiency. Like, if it takes time, heck no, I'm not going to use it. Nah, like, don't get me wrong. Like, sure, Manly might sound better with the real thing, but if it takes forever to patch up that thing, like, I'm not going to deal with the patch box. I'm just going to use the plugin, or maybe just a different EQ, like something else. But the thing is, the one place that I do actually think that it does make it more efficient is tracking.
Yeah.
Because if you're recording and you have it compressed and EQ'd on the way in, it saves time.
Yeah.
Because now you have to do less mixing-wise.
Yep. And I know a lot of people are actually scared or just unwilling to do that on the way in. For instance, like when we were doing the Smoke Perp session, I was explaining to the engineer, which, you know, we may have soon as well, I asked them, like, hey, do you want the Distressor on channel 2 when he's recording in the control room versus in the booth? And he's like, actually, I'd rather have no compression on the way in. You know, he relies more on what his plugins are doing. So that just goes further to say, you know, just yes, you can have compression on the way in. And yes, it actually makes the mixing process a lot easier. But some people are so used to their workflow that minimizing even more helps them out. You know, so just kind of find what works for you. I'll be honest. I know clients who have U47s and they still use like the Townsend Labs because it's easier for them. I know people with
Townsend
Sony
Labs is the UA's emulation microphone for
exactly.
those that don't know.
And I know people who still have a C800G and they refuse to downgrade to anything. But every time they take it around, they have to be swapping tubes, which is scarce right now. Parts are no longer available. You know, why would you want to limit yourself to a very expensive item that, yes, it gives you arguably a really nice sound, but many people actually hear these microphones that a lot of people are using and they revere and they find out that it doesn't work for their voice. We're so unique. If you listen to DK and I, if I use this SM7B versus he uses SM7B, I may sound tubby because it's a low end heavy mic. He may sound perfect because he's got a higher register voice.
I got no low end in my voice. I need something with a fat low end. Like I use a ribbon mic.
I'm fat
and I still sound nasally.
No, but you know, it just goes to say, you know, there is no holy grail piece. So don't seek the holy grail piece. Seek what works for you. You know, and if you need help with that, you can always email me. I can help you find what it is you're looking for if you give me a description of what you're after. And if you're looking to purchase something, I've built relationships with lots of brands. I help a lot of them get outreach to a lot of bigger names and things like that. And because of that, I'm always happy to pass on the help that I can to everybody that reaches out. So if you ever need help finding things, just remember my email is lu@inthemixstudios.com. Just let me know what you need.
I will put that email in the description as well. Yeah, Lou sells and resells equipment for many, many people. If you're actually genuinely looking for recommendations, which Lou is extremely knowledgeable about recommendations because he sells a lot of this gear, so he uses it a lot.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like maybe, you know, Lou can throw you a deal if you're looking for something. Throw you a bone. So if you're looking for something like on top of that, like at the same time, like if you're at a home studio and you're about to break the bank and go broke for a compressor,
how about you get the recommendation
rethink
first?
That. Yeah, rethink
like,
that.
Yeah, let's have that conversation before you spend, you know, $3,600 on something that neither one of us necessarily want as our first choice anyways.
Let's smack some sense into you, so.
Virtually. I'll put the hand emoji.
No, I'm teasing. But yeah, on that note, like, gear is good, but also inefficient at times. I think
it can be a magical benefit, like we said about the retros. The Mog EQs are amazing.
Shout out to Mog. Oh, my gosh. Shout out to Mog.
Now that DK has actually heard the 500 series unit versus the actual plugin, he agrees. The 500 series unit still has a little more magic than the actual plugin.
It's a little bit more clear.
But here's the funny thing. DK, have you ever had an issue with the plugin before discovering this?
Nah, never. Nah. I still use the plugin, full confidence.
Exactly. So if you want that little bit of clarity more and you feel like you're in a stage in which that benefits your productions, then by all means, hit me up. I have a nice little relationship with the company and we can definitely find who can actually get you the pieces that you need. But more importantly, just focus on getting a good sound even with what you have, because you'd be surprised. One of my favorite albums that I ever mixed was Completely in the Box because we couldn't afford anything and we lusted over the idea of, man, if we could only mix this in a real studio, maybe we should do the final touch-ups of the mix at a real studio, go in, throw the multi-tracks into an SSL and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, listening back to it 3 years later, we're still blown away by it. It feels so good. It's so organic, and yet it's digital. It's in the box. You know, so don't let me deter you from buying gear. I'm a gear slut.
Yeah.
That's what I am. I love gear. I would never tell somebody that the gear is not as good as the plugin or less than the plugin or pointless. But I do believe that you need to scale your business. And until it's a full-fledged business.
There we go. We're talking about business now. There we go.
I think you need to scale it to what it is you actually need. Some people need a good vocal chain because all they do is produce songs for vocalists. Some people record bands. Some people don't actually record. Some people are post-production engineers, and they still like the idea of gear because they want to have something as a nicer option. But even then, it's not required, because how many post-production studios do you see with walls of gear, and yet they're doing stuff for, like, Disney?
Yeah, for real.
You never see it. And it's only in music that we lust over it so much. But it's because we're creatives. We want that extra magic. We want that bit that gives us the edge on our creativity.
We want to feel like we're different from other people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why exclusive items exist. It's to kind of,
like,
you know,
sneakers.
It's marketing like an elite. You know, it's to make people feel good, like elite. But we're like way over time with this episode. But the last thing I want to bring up is, do you think Serban Gnaea? Do you know who that is? He's like the top pop mixer. Nobody knows about him.
Oh.
Nobody knows about him. He's low key. He's like, he mixes every single song on the pop charts. Like a lot of them. He doesn't. He mixes in the box.
Yeah. And I believe it's Jason Joshua that says, if it's vocals, it's in the box.
Mm-hmm.
If it's music, he goes through the SSL, but vocals are strictly in the box. He does not put it through the console.
Andrew Sheps is all in the box now, apparently.
Yeah, he sold his Neve.
Oh, he sold his Neve?
I believe I remember seeing something
his
that
console?
He sold. Yeah.
Oh.
Because
I thought you would, if you had that already, I thought you would use it for summing at the least.
No, because I remember he was doing a dual console setup, but I believe I read somewhere that he actually sold it. I may be wrong on this, but I know there's a lot of top engineers that are now starting to go into just in-the-box hybrid setups where they still have their favorite pieces, like Jesse Ray. He's a deskless setup, which is amazing, because how many people can go without a desk? I mean, come on.
I don't know. I can't use a mouse and keyboard on my lap.
Exactly. But he still has 1178s on the side. He still has distressors on the side. He still has, I believe, a 1073 on the side. But he's kind of a minimalist, you know, and that's the amazing part, because, like, the Burner Boy stuff is 90% in the box. Like, if anything, he might have used a couple of his pieces. But if you want to say that 10% was the recording process.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And with that, honestly, let us know what you think. Ask us any questions. Again, send us any questions. To be honest, you can just DM us on Instagram at our different Instagram tags if you don't follow us already, and then which is in the podcast description, the episode description. If you'd like some gear recommendations, some help in figuring out what you need, maybe you talk to Lou. Lou@inthemixstudios.com.
Yep.
Another thing that you can ask Lou questions. Ask us questions.
I love to nerd out.
For now, we'll just do, you know what? Just ask Lou@inthemixstudios.com will be the questions email. Just send questions that way, and we'll answer them on the podcast. It's funny because I can keep up with the technical, and I understand why it exists, but we're just the opposite. So it's like fun to talk about this stuff.
Yep. He'll see me patching in things while he's completely in the box, and we both really like each other's mixes. They're just different.
They're just different.
It's not one better than the other. And I tell him all the time, I think some of his mixes are better. And that's great, because I'm listening to a different point of view, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. And it goes in the other way. Sometimes I hear things like with R&B like, and a lot of other that stuff. I'm like, whoa, that low end is like the best balance in a vocal I've heard. You know, like it's nice. And it's more importantly, it's different. You know, yes. So on that note, everybody, happy mixing and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
If you'd like to take advantage of my free guides and online videos, please check out links.dkmixes.com. That's links.dekeimixes.com. Yo, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug about Antares and Auto-Tune. Antares makes the original industry standard Auto-Tune that we all know and love the sound of. We are sponsored by them, so if you visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/Auto-Tune, we do get a small kickback from every purchase. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please enjoy this episode.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.